that left the South American country without power for more than 24 hours. They attacked the automated control of the Guri system that supplies the country with energy, Rodriguez said in his statement. The information was handled by U.S. Senator Marco Rubio shortly after the aggression was executed, as he revealed on his Twitter account. How did Marco Rubio know that backup generators had failed? At the time, no one knew, that the Bolivarian government official said. Also, Rodriguez denied that hospitals in Venezuela had recorded death during the day without power, as President Nicolas Maduro had ordered the provision of generation plants to prevent any such attack. He further showed a series of publications on the same social network as Senator Rubio, those of U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and of opposition leader Juan Guaido, which tied them to the sabotage attack. While the employees of the state electric power company are working tirelessly, Donald Trump's entourage was celebrating, enjoying with guilty perversion the anguish of the Venezuelan people, said Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza.
The United States is urging and cajoling countries around the globe, especially India, to stop buying Venezuelan oil as Washington continues choking the country financially, hoping this will provoke a regime change. We say India should not be helping this regime. You should be on the side of the Venezuelan people, U.S. Special Representative for Venezuela Elliot Abrams told Reuters in an interview, noting that the same tactic of arguing, cajoling, urging is being used in similar interactions with other countries. Oil revenues remain at about 98% of the country's export profits and are crucial for Venezuela to keep the economy afloat after the U.S. slapped virtually every possible sanction against Nicolas Maduro and his government. Even before the self-proclaimed interim president, U.S.-backed Juan Guaido, announced his intention to oust Maduro on the 23rd of January, Washington had been pursuing aggressive market policies against Venezuela. Faced with increased isolation following U.S. sanctions against Petroleros de Venezuela, S.A., Venezuela turned its attention to New Delhi. India's third largest supplier of crude, Venezuela said last month that it's seeking to double the current oil exports of 340,000 barrels per day to the South Asian country. According to Bloomberg, India became the leading buyer of Venezuelan crude during the first half of February. In spite of U.S. pressure, India has refused to stop dealing with Maduro's government, noting that a sovereign country cannot be ordered to recognize Guaido as legitimate leader.
The time now, very nearly 3 o'clock. The next program follows after a trade test transmission. Nation. Right people, right time, just the wrong location. I've got a good idea.
Just you keep me near, I'll be so good for you. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Nevertheless, today I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate. I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction
here.
Indian land! You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you speak? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. White man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart of the region.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
I don't mind. I mean, frankly, I told the House, if you want, let them see it. Again, I say, a deputy, because of the fact that the Attorney General didn't have the courage to do it himself, a deputy that's appointed appoints another man to write a report. I just won an election with 63 million votes or so. 63 million. I had 206 to 223 in the Electoral College, 306 to 223. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, I just won one of the greatest elections of all time in the history of this country, and even you will admit that. And now I have somebody writing a report that never got a vote. It's called the Mueller Report. So explain that, because my voters don't get it.
Today I am announcing that New Zealand will ban all military-style semi-automatic weapons. We will also ban all assault rifles. We will ban all high-capacity magazines. We will ban all parts with the ability to convert semi-automatic or any other type of firearm into a military-style semi-automatic weapon. We will ban parts that cause a firearm to generate semi-automatic, automatic, or close to automatic gunfire. In short, every semi-automatic weapon used in the terrorist attack on Friday will be banned in this country. These changes will require legislation. That legislation is now being drafted and will be introduced under urgency. A shortened select committee process will apply, so I encourage all those who wish to submit to start now. My expectation is that the law will be in place by the end of the next two-week sitting session, which is by the 11th of April.
Internet radio for smarter original.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salaton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian. editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service. Blogging to the people of the fourth world from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com, as well as our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my co-executive producer, master studio engineer, and best friend in the activist world, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, coming straight at you from Everyman Studios in unceded Chinookan People's Territories, North America. I'm just going to skip right to it. And I know, and this is one of the reasons why I'm saying, why I'm about to say what I'm about to say. I'm two steps from quitting this program, from quitting. Did they know that the studio light? I'm done. I'm done. Some of you know what I'm talking about, because I mean, obviously, if you've been paying attention to this broadcast, you knew this it's been coming. I'm tired. I've been doing this since, off and on in 2000, as a regular broadcast since 2001. I talked about this. I've been homeless twice. And I still did this show with my notebook computer. I still did this show. I still blogged. It was all spotty and intermittent, but I kept it in, right? We've been on a bunch of different goddamn platforms over the years. And despite the fact that I don't have a goddamn shekel to my name, we've used every legitimate free source. And what I mean by that is, it's not, slipping advertising on you or, asking you to sell or mortgage your house so that you can use their web space or what have you. We're using the best resources that the web, I feel, has to offer. And there's plenty out there in terms of using the internet, which is it's a highway. It's an information highway. It shouldn't be looked at as anything more than that. It's an information highway. And there's a whole lot good on here. I mean, if I was young today and had access to Wikipedia as a child in school, I can't imagine. Now, I probably would have stayed on Wikipedia all day. I would have tried to have learned different languages that way. I would have, read literature that I hadn't had access to. And this is what the fucking internet, which started out as, I don't know how many of you know this, and a lot of you don't give a shite, but I'm going to say it anyway. The internet started out as a means of scientists to trade information and peer review. Damn near instantaneously, without having to send materials to someone else, to another lab or what have you, a colleague somewhere, or someone who is more experienced in your field or can give you a reasonable or exact, because if you're dealing with science, you're supposed to be exact, clarification, a review of what it is that you're doing, a critique, what have you. It's gone, as usual of every fucking thing else, capitalism got into it. It starts off when people are creative and they realize that there's things that you can do with this medium. And then capitalism got into it. And then this pure human fucking greed took over, and folly took over behind that. But of course, you can't really, say anything because people get angry with you. Which is fine if they really knew what the fuck they were talking about, And look, if you're, I'm telling you right now, I'm in a bad mood. We haven't been here in a while because I'm just frustrated, because it's like, what's the fucking point? So much has happened since I've been in here. How many goddamn terrorist attacks, white racist terrorist attacks have happened since I last spoke to you people? And what really made me get off my ass, or really, Lupe, telling my wife that, that I need to either say something or not do anything at all at this point because of what happened in New Zealand. And, yeah, you don't mind my telling the story, right? I mean, her and my wife basically had a discussion where my wife was like, it's time for him to quit. You know, he's doing this shit for free. He's not getting anything out of it but a fucking ulcer. You know, he doesn't, you know, I mean, she's trying to stop me from looking at news in the morning. That's how bad it is. Because, you know, I sit with her and we have coffee over breakfast and we watch the goddamn mainstream news and then we slip over to Democracy Now! And then I get online and try to find out what the fuck is really going on. Because you can't get international news in the United States unless you go online. Because, I mean, you got all this cable crap, right? But, you know, Al Jazeera, they took Al Jazeera off completely. But you can get Russia Today, though. If you have HBO, you know, whatever, Amazon, that Roku thing, whatever system you have, you will find Jack Blood, you will find Alex Jones, you will find Joe Rogan. And stop making fucking excuses. He's had all kinds of fucking, you know, neo-Nazis and shit on his show trying to explain why they're not goddamn neo-Nazis, that they're just white civil rights activists. Okay? And he gives them all the fucking room to explain everything. And, you know, we're wondering why we have a problem with fucking neo-Nazis. I mean, I've been saying this shit here for decades, which is one of the reasons why I'm ready to fucking quit. Okay? Because it just seems like, you know, young motherfuckers, you goddamn, I'm not talking about you, dear listener. You know, because obviously, if you're listening to this broadcast, I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you, and I'm not talking about you. But see, this is one of the fucking problems, though, that we have when we're dealing with politics in the fucking United States, when we're dealing with just about anything in the fucking United States. Because everybody takes everything so goddamn personal, as if we're talking about you. You know, which is ridiculous. And this is why I'm saying what I'm saying about millennials. And like I said, if you don't like this, then, you know, stop listening to this fucking broadcast. Because I'm really getting tired of not being able to say what the fuck I want to say. You know, because, you know, Lupe is like, oh, well, you can't insult all these young people. And it's like, I'm not insulting these young people. But they take all any kind of criticism, no matter how goddamn helpful, as a fucking insult. You know, I mean, that was just the thing of a couple of years ago. I was listening to an NPR, which is always a headache if you have any sort of reasonable grasp of what the fuck is happening out here in the world. You know, National Public Radio was 60% funded by, I don't know. I mean, look, when you listen to it, listen to the sponsors. You know, I mean, 60% of it is funded by the federal government. It's like the Voice of America. So it's not that you shouldn't look at them or shouldn't listen to them, but understand the fucking source. You know, and I'm wondering, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, Lupe, are they the fucking source of the millennial accent? Because I know with my speaking patterns and bullshit, excuse me, I'm going to sound real hypocritical over this broadcast. And that's cool because, you know, I'm realizing how much of a fucking generational gap there is between me and so many other goddamn people. And one of the reasons why it is, you know, really impossible for me to fucking take y'all seriously. And now when I'm saying this, I'm not even just talking about millennials. But millennials can kiss my motherfucking ass. You know, like I said, I just mentioned, you know, fucking NPR, you know, National Public Radio, National Pentagon Radio, however the fuck you want to look at it. You know, they had this you know, one of their little brief stories, you know, one of their little cute stories, right? And what I mean by that is that they'll start off on a serious fucking subject, like talking about, you know, white supremacist violence or some shit, and really just gloss over the whole fucking thing. It is so superficial, it's ridiculous. You know, because I can listen to the BBC, I can listen to English language, Swedish goddamn news reports, and get a much more, you know, serious, insightful, you know, really looking, investigative goddamn 5-minute fucking story than I can out of goddamn NPR. Yeah, and they'll end it, the last word, the last example, or, you know, the last thought that you're left with, besides the voice of the goddamn whoever the fuck is running the story, whoever the journalist is running the story, is the fucking Nazi, for example. You know, is the fucked up Republican. You know, is the fucked up whoever the hell, unless it's somebody that the crowd is against. Do you kind of get what I'm saying? You know, they just finished talking here not too long ago about this nutcase, you know, talking about mainstream news now. And like I said, roll with me, because I'm going to be going all over the bubble here with this. This, what, I don't know what I tell you, but 3 days ago, right? MSNBC, you know, because we watch it because it's just there, right? And fucking MSNBC, right? So they talk about the New Zealand thing, and they didn't spend a whole lot of fucking time on it. But right before they ended the goddamn segment, which had to have been about 40, no, it had to be longer than that. It's just under a minute or so. They talk about violence in the United States. And what two examples did they use? Now, we're talking about a white supremacist fucking terrorist who cited not just Donald Trump in his goddamn manifesto, but this motherfucking game fucker PewDiePie and the black conservative Candace Owens. But they didn't mention PewDiePie or Candace Owens. They mentioned him mentioning Trump because they kind of had to. But they didn't mention the other goddamn two, right? Because they don't want to offend gamers. And they don't want to offend black folks. So they just, you know, left those two motherfuckers out. So they turn around and then bring up equivalence, which is what NPR does all the goddamn time. And the mainstream news does this in general, but they brought out equivalence. And how they brought out the equivalence was they showed that black crazy reporter who lost his fucking mind. I can't remember his name, but you know what I'm talking about. He lost his goddamn mind. And he killed his two fucking house cats and then went out to do a story and killed the fucking reporter and the camera. And then he killed his fucking self. And then they mentioned somebody who murdered his wife. And I want to say he murdered his child. I can't remember the exact details, but this was very recent. And he was also, he's black or African-American, if we want to get that, you know, get with that, right? You know, why motherfuckers identify themselves as nigga. And I'm going to get to that, too. And it's like, yeah, man, you know, so you have a black mass murderer who also killed his fucking house cats. And if you've been listening to this show long enough, you know how the fuck I feel about that. So and then here it is, you know, this other motherfucker kills his wife, which is bad enough. Possibly kill his child, which is super goddamn bad. I don't know if he killed himself or they got him, whatever the fuck. But he was black, too. I saw the picture, right? They talked about these two incidences in relation to the New Zealand goddamn white supremacist terrorist attack. When you've had how many motherfucking white supremacist terrorist attacks that you could have talked about here in the United States that just happened over since the fucking year began? How about since Trump has been in office? How about since fucking Obama has been in office? They picked two, you know, black killers who were just that, killers. They were murderers. But they were not fucking racist goddamn murderers. Now, you know, I mean, if you want to say that the first guy who killed his fucking cats was racist because he killed these two white people, was there a racial angle to it? Not that I could see other than he was angry with every goddamn buddy for not making it, you know, or not making it as well as he fucking should have, right? He was angst. You know, no. You know, how the fuck do you compare that bullshit to what the fuck just happened? You had this other guy who tried to get into a black church, but the door was locked. So then he went to a fucking a store, one of these ugly-ass fucking strip malls we have here in the United States, and fucking just shot, you know, two black people in the parking lot because, well, he could. Or in the store, whatever, fucking shot somebody else in the goddamn parking lot, right? Because he just, well, he's angry. Somebody's got to pay. Some nigga did this to me, and somebody's got to fucking pay because they're all taking over my goddamn country, even though Africans have been here since the beginning of this motherfucker. Right? Crispus Attucks, another motherfucker like me, black Indian, right? On the ship, figured that he was standing on solid ground with these white men when he went and challenged the goddamn British, and they blew his motherfucking head off. But you can't explain that shit to any of these white folks, you know, because it's all about them. It's all about them. And yeah, you get a black Republican like Candace Owens that will mention, you know, Paul Cuffey or, you know, or some other historical black person that was there during the early days and da, 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 da. But she was just named by a goddamn white supremacist as a fucking excuse as to why Muslims should die. Right. But I guess it's OK because it wasn't black people that should die in this particular case, even though we already know what the fuck his position would be on black people. But see, you have what? Kola Booth. You have Hersey Ali. You have now Candace Owens doing this shit. And I guess it's okay.
that black people are letting her, you know, these three that I just named, you know, do what the fuck they're doing against Muslims. And then at the same time, here comes Farrakhan with his, you know, termite bullshit or his gutter religion bullshit, you know, or any of the other dumbass fucking things that he has said over the fucking decades. So, you know, we're not going to say anything. And what was her name? Tamika Mallory? People are telling me I need to, you know, stand up and defend this sister. I'm like, I can't defend her on this. I said, that's the problem. She's defending Farrakhan simply because of the fact that Farrakhan is black. Unless it's because she really believes the shit that he's saying. Because, you know, let's, you know, think about this for a second. There were two recent goddamn attacks in the United States. And one was not a physical attack. There was just a young black man who was caught on fucking camera putting up, you know, kill Jews and fuck the Jews type bullshit.
In a goddamn synagogue in New York City some fucking where. And then there was another attack not too long ago by a black guy who went and shot up some fucking people outside of the synagogue, you know, or he tried to, or some bullshit like this. And then on top of that, you got the white supremacists who had just went not too long ago and shot up a goddamn synagogue. So how come they didn't show that story? The motherfucker who shot up the synagogue recently with the motherfucker that happened, you know, with the shit that happened in New Zealand. Why are they not mentioning Candace Owens and PewDie fucking Pie? Who is this Nazi son of a bitch? And who is it that these motherfuckers, you know, these goddamn gamers are fucking pissing blood because, oh, whoa, he's innocent. He's got nothing to do with it. He got kicked off a couple of services in the past for promoting Nazi shit. It's all over fucking YouTube. It's all over the goddamn net. But he's innocent. And see, this is why you millennials and you fucking hipsters can kiss my fucking ass. Because y'all the ones that were telling me to chill the fuck out. Let somebody have their fucking opinion. You know, a Nazi is just another fucking opinion. You heard me right, folks. Because it's just like apartheid. Everybody, I've known white South Africans. I'm talking about know them in the biblical fucking sense. And they told me how fucking white people were in goddamn South Africa. Because when I met them, apartheid was still going on. They had to politically leave the fucking country because if you're a white man and you supported the AN goddamn C, you could be fucking killed over there and it wouldn't be a goddamn thing that your family could fucking do about it. Okay? Same thing with Israelis. I've known Israelis that had to leave Israel because of their politics. They were Ashkenazim some fucking Jews who supported Palestinian fucking territorial rights. Excuse me. And could not stay in the country. Had to leave their fucking country. You know, we've heard at various times when it was politically feasible for the U.S. about the Czechs and the Poles that have had to, you know, or the East Germans, you know, all of that Eastern Bloc shit, how they had to get out, or, you know, because, you know, they were for freedom and this, that, and the other. Was it Alexander Solzhenitsyn? You know, did I pronounce his name correctly? You know, that motherfucker comes over here talking all his shit. He was supporting everything wrong with the goddamn system. Except for the things that pissed him off. You understand what I'm saying? So there's a whole lot of selfishness and this narrow-minded bullshit that goes on. And a whole lot of fucking shit that passes for fun that people take as politics. The fact that John Oliver has more fucking cachet than in the political sense with fucking millennials than Amy Goodman does is ridiculous. And somebody admitted to me a couple of days ago, Luke, that their main thing for Glenn Greenwald is that he's a gay journalist and that they're gay and that's why they follow him. It's not, you know, the fact that he has been going back and forth with Julian Assange and has not been stopped. And I'm not saying that journalists are supposed to be harassed by the system, but Julian Assange has been working with the Trump goddamn administration. This is a fact, right? Excuse me. Goddamn Dana Rohrabacher, who is out of office now from California, he was over there trying to make deals. He was visiting Julian Assange. Dana Rohrabacher was considered Russia's favorite congressman. And Dana Rohrabacher was a 100% goddamn Trump's fucking supporter. I mean, Steven Seagal is in the camp of Putin. He now has Russian citizenship. And he also deals with the Trump motherfuckers. He's also connected to Joe Arpaio, who said that he doesn't give a fuck when Obama was in, that he doesn't give a fuck about the federal law. He'll obey whatever federal laws he feels like obeying.
and that he can't be made to follow any goddamn law. And here you got Trump recently, since I've last talked to y'all, talking about, hey, you know, I got bikers for Trump. I got cops for Trump. And they're tougher than the left. And he's just demonizing the fucking left. And the left is just sitting in a motherfucking corner pissing on itself. Right? Because that's the other goddamn thing that got me, you know, to finally come in here was Nancy Pelosi's, well, you know, impeachment is off the table, part two. Impeachment is off the table again, coming from a Democratic leader? Are you fucking kidding me? You've got to be kidding me, folks. You've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me, people, that you are not still fucking talking about this. I went on Twitter today, yesterday, the day before yesterday, after having an absence, and I'm like, why are people not saying anything about Nancy Pelosi and the DNC leadership saying that impeachment, the impeachment of Trump is too much trouble? Okay? And I gotta put up a bullshit again from millennials. From fucking millennials. Who know nothing about life worth a goddamn. Have experienced no motherfucking real goddamn hardships. I mean, everybody's got their personal fucking thing going on, but wait a goddamn minute. You white men and fucking women are, you know, you're not putting up the fucking shit the rest of us are putting up with. And it's like, I get it from black people here all the goddamn time in town. You know, when it's like, hey, why are you fucking with that white guy? Oh, man, he's just a motherfucking white mother. Why fuck with him? There's a neo-Nazi sitting on a goddamn Harley right over there staring you down right now while you're talking all this shit to this punk motherfucker. He's just a fucking hipster. He's harmless, okay? You know, and all you're going to do is just end up in the motherfucking who's gal from running your goddamn mouth, scaring this motherfucker, gets on 911 and shit, and that's your ass. See, my point is that we're fucking with the wrong white people. And as usual, even when it comes to the rest of this, all of these, and I'm saying it like this, because apparently in order to get people to fucking do anything at all about the way women are treated in society, you motherfuckers need a hashtag. You need it to be cool. You need something to rally behind. You need to have fun at the motherfucking rally. Yeah, I'm saying this. You know, because I pointed this out before. The spooks already who listen to this shit, they already know what the fuck I'm talking about. Because first off, they already know what's really going on. You know, Ralph Shulman was one of my first goddamn instructors. Do you understand what I'm talking about politically? I was actually trained as a motherfucking socialist. Trained as an activist. Trained as a fucking street level fucking journalist. And made an effort to keep my motherfucking eyes open and my ears motherfucking open and my mouth goddamn closed, you know. But you young motherfuckers don't want to apprentice under anybody. You don't want to learn anything. You know, if you did well once, well, you're just going to continue to motherfucking do well, even though it was a fucking fluke. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up, Lupe, as an example, and this is a bullshit, terrible example, but this is probably something that these fucking millennials will goddamn grasp. Right, because it's a cultural fucking reference. Now, some of you who watch cable television, and I do, again, occasionally, because there's really nothing for me to motherfucking watch other than the old-time movies. And I mean that. I know what I sound like. I know I sound like an old motherfucker. I do. I know what I sound like. I sound exactly like what the fuck I did not want to sound like when I was young. But the difference is that I'm looking back and realizing I was given a whole lot of grains of motherfucking knowledge that I'm still able to use today while you young motherfuckers, and I'm sorry, but it's not always your fault, but a lot of it is your fault because you refuse to fucking hear anybody. But then again, you know, what am I supposed to fucking say? Because in the hood, it's worse. Yeah, I know, I'm hopping around here, but anyway, and try to remind me, Luke, to bring me back to that, but there's some TV show called The Prophet. And there's an episode where these two fucking young guys, apparently they were selling socks. Because that's a new thing right now, right? These fucking $130 socks. You know, $80 fucking one pair of goddamn socks, right? So people are buying these expensive, funny looking, funky socks, right? So, okay, fine. Because they're influencers, quote unquote, you know, like that shit from the Fyre Festival. you know, the bullshit that cat would have walked if he hadn't tried to get greedy and continue a scam while he was already motherfucking under indictment and was about to walk. You know, the same one that Ja Rule is walking away from. And my beef for Ja Rule is, I don't give a fuck about the general scam, because that's just fucked up bullshit. My problem is that he sat there on film telling a bunch of black people in Bermuda or wherever the fuck they held this shit that, yeah, I can vouch for this motherfucker and, you know, help him out so we can all make money. And he left. Now, he could have fucking at least covered the goddamn salaries, but he didn't. And I can't remember which one it was. Because there's two of them. There's one on Netflix and one on Hulu. But one of them, the goddamn mayor of the town had to come out of her pocket and her fucking retirement money to she couldn't even pay everybody off. She gave them what the fuck she could. She's broke. And Ja Rule walked the fuck off after he went there and did exactly what I told you I never fucking did. And as many times as I was fucking, you know, put into this position where I could have done this, I did not do it. I did not go in front for white people. Ever. Ever. I'm not Ja Rule. I'm not motherfucking Kanye goddamn West. Okay? And now y'all are forgiving Kanye West because this woman just got out of prison. Don't you see what the fuck is going on? He pardons Jack Johnson and shit. Don't you see what the fuck is going on? Trump would fucking call for Jack Johnson today to be lynched. He still refuses to back down on the Central Park Five. He still refuses to admit that he was wrong about that motherfucking case. And why was he wrong about that case? Because the fucking guy that actually did that shit, if I remember correctly, was a Puerto Rican, wasn't even, one of them was Latino, two of them were Latino, right? But in any case, I'm talking about physiologically, he was not, he didn't fit the description of these young boys, and he was a lot older. And I've admitted this on this fucking broadcast at least twice, and I'm saying it again. I was one of the black people who was fucking saying they need to put the fucking max on those boys. Because of the way that the fucking story was presented. They didn't tell us that these kids were railroaded. They didn't tell us that they didn't have any physical fucking evidence against them. And seeing where black people get mad with this shit now, it's the same sort of mentality that says that Farrakhan is okay. When he's not. He ain't doing shit for you. He's running around with Alex Jones. And now they're popping Scientology. Which means that not only is the fucking G-Man all up in the craw of motherfucking the Nation of Islam, now the Scientology is up in the craw of the Nation of Islam. Scientology, Operation Snow White. You know, I mean, they invaded the fucking FBI, the CIA. They tried to get into the fucking DIA. Yo, look at the fuck up. There's Wikipedia pages and all kinds of shit all about this. How these motherfuckers infiltrated the intelligence fucking centers of the United States goddamn government. But for some fucking reason, they're still in business. I know I'm hopping around here, but they're still in business. Why is it you millennial motherfuckers can't seem to think that that's a problem? None of you so-called political fucking experts, a fucking crazy, quasi-religious fucking group that was formulated by a Nazi. See, that's what kills me about fucking Scientology being in the Nation of Islam, because they supposedly have a research department. These are supposedly the smartest black men in America. That's how they define themselves. And yeah, I can say this shit because I got members of my family been fucking NOI. They were given numbers. For my first cousin on goddamn down. So don't fucking try to tell me about the culture, the home life of the fucking NOI. I can tell you what the fucking shit is like. You understand? Fucking tell me. How do you read Message to the Black Man and side with anything that L. Ron Hubbard would have anything to do with? This motherfucker first off formulated a goddamn religion based on science fiction books. He was a science fiction fucking writer. He ran around with Jack Parsons and shit, who was a Satanist in L.A. The same guy that came up with Jet Assisted Takeoff, by the way. He was a fucking scientist, and he ran off with the man's woman, his money, like was like $5,000 at that time, and fucking started up some bullshit someplace else. Which was basically fucking Scientology. He wrote science fiction stories that are exactly like Scientology. So, I mean, come on, man, you motherfuckers are crazy. You can find fucking audio on YouTube of him calling black people stupid. He called black people niggers. But Isaac Hayes was down with it, so you can't say nothing, right? You know, like that motherfucking Republican, Luke, not too long ago when they were having the hearing on Trump's racism.
or came up during the hearing on Trump's racism about Representative Omar, who is bullshit saying that she's anti-Semitic. She pointed out, how is it that you can fucking be the mayor of Chicago and be a lieutenant in the fucking IDF at the same goddamn time? You're not even, when you get your passport, they make it clear you're not supposed to serve in a foreign motherfucking army. You have to get a special dispensation in order to do that shit from the State Department. So no. Representative Omar brought up some real fucking shit. It got into this whole thing with it, whoever this Republican was. He brings this fucking black chick. And yeah, and if you're a millennial, you got a problem with me saying chick, whatever. I got to hear y'all on the motherfucking bus all goddamn day and on the corner talking about bitch. I don't want to hear it. This dumb motherfucking, because she is a dumb fucking stupid ass chick, going to stand there looking all fucking innocent and coy while this guy says, oh, well, she worked for the Trump campaign. Why would she work for a campaign that's racist? I don't know. Ask Diamond and Silk. Diamond and Silk took money from the Trump campaign and flipped out on Cory Booker. And yo, if you take Cory Booker seriously for fucking president, you know, I don't take you seriously. The motherfucker doesn't even look like he can fucking relax. And he's too close. I mean, really, his eyes, does he blink? You know, and fucking, he is too close to Republicans. He doesn't really challenge these motherfuckers, man. And besides, I lived in Newark for fucking too long. Don't tell me about black leadership in Newark. Black leadership in Newark is why Newark is why the fuck it is right now. We used to believe in that bullshit. Seriously, man. Amiri Baraka, Newark, right? You know, black faces in high places. Well, that makes sense that the black faces in the high place is going to do something for the people. But Obama went up there and did shit for white America. That's just the way it is. Now, you know, now we got, and I told people this shit. I swear to whatever God you claim to fucking believe in, I fucking tried to say, go back in the fucking archives here, all right? I tried to tell y'all before Obama got in, I said this shit is there's going to be a fucking reaction to this. There's going to be a reaction to this, and the reaction is going to be the fucking election after goddamn Obama. Go back in the fucking files. Go back on, you know, to the files of me on the Bob Kincaid show when I talked about this. Before we had a fucking falling out over exactly the type of bullshit, the mentality, the fucking current that I'm talking about right the fuck now. These motherfuckers all through Obama's goddamn term of office, both terms of office, his tenure, kept saying, well, we're going to take it back. What the fuck do you think that meant? And you motherfucking millennials are saying, don't be mad at my uncle. Don't be angry with my friend. Everybody has a right to an opinion. They're not racist. They just have a right to opinion that white people have rights to. The same fucking millennials. The same millennials who fucking will, you know, I mean, y'all fucking kill, y'all fucking really, I mean, goddamn. You know, I mean, what was I talking about on the, I didn't finish with the prophet, right? Thank you, Luke. Well, these two motherfucking millennials come up there and, you know, they're influencers, right? So, you know, because they're cool and they influence, I mean, they're both good looking guys. They're young. So, yeah, a lot of, you know, young women are going to fucking check them out. And young guys who want to be like that are going to check them out. Of course. And probably not so many young people. I mean, how many fucking older women are going to, what's his name? Because my wife is in 2 and 2 and I can't get it. He's young. Bruno Mars, right? I mean, there's women like 45 and shit going to his goddamn concerts. I don't get it. What happened to the fucking country that we are not maturing? We're just getting younger and more immature every goddamn day as the years pass on. You know, I mean, it snapped on me one time and I was watching, and I don't, but I was watching this time fucking television. It was a Jamie Oliver show. I want to say I was at somebody's home for this, but it was a Jamie Oliver show and he had stepped out of his house and I'm thinking, he looks like a fucking boy. And I'm not trying to insult Jamie Oliver at all, because I remember some people got on him recently not too long ago, for saying that, you know, people are fucked up for eating fast food. Well, I mean, I'm sorry. He's right. Now, does he know America the way you know America? Well, you got to consider something. If you've ever been to the fucking UK, you'll realize how they're eating like Americans now, and they're getting fat and fucking sloppy too, and they're dressing like Americans now. It's ridiculous.
Now, I'm not saying that England shouldn't fucking progress, but how is having McDonald's in every other goddamn corner progress? Or fucking Starbucks when you had perfectly good Italian and French style cafes for American fucking crap and fried chicken and hamburgers and all of this bullshit. So many goddamn people that are overweight. They got a fucking and in Canada and in Australia for that matter, they put labels in the fucking clothes now to say you probably have a health problem. Or did they cancel that? They can't, well, because people got their feelings hurt, right? Okay, so you're 350 fucking pounds. You're costing the state all kinds of fucking money and health shit. You're not fucking healthy. You can't tell me you're enjoying your motherfucking life. And I'm not talking about people who have health problems. I'm not talking about people who have medical problems. Glandular shit, thyroid problems. That's not what the fuck I'm talking about. And people who are overweight for those reasons should never be fucked with. But if you're just, you know, a lazy fuck because you're just smoking weed all day and playing goddamn Man o' War or whatever the fuck bullshit, a fucking computer game, Xbox, whatever the fuck. And I know I said this a couple of shows ago. I'm going to say it again because a lot of women are telling me this shit. That they can't get their fucking husbands off the goddamn Xbox. That you motherfuckers come in for, I'm not talking about you, dear listener. I'm talking about a lot of these motherfuckers are coming home from work now. I mean, they go to work. And then they're on the Xbox. Like little fucking boys. You want to grow a beard? Grow a fucking beard, man. Shape your goddamn beard. Groom the motherfucker. It's another goddamn thing a lot of women are telling me that they got, I mean, like men are just becoming infertile. They got to tell them now to wash their fucking underwear. What is that when you're 30 goddamn 5, 30 fucking 6? Your wife has to tell you to fucking be clean? What the fuck is that? Oh man, you know, these are graphic novels, not comic books. Oh, give me a fucking break, man. Because you motherfuckers didn't want to grow up and wanted to keep doing your childish shit. Now it's a graphic fucking novel. Give me a fucking break, man. It's a goddamn comic book. Grow the fuck up. Wear a pair of fucking shoes. Pull your fucking trousers up. God damn. You know, and when black men do this, it's even more hurtful to me. Because here it is. We've never, you know, got to still argue to this day that we're men. And I'm saying this speaking right now as a black man, right? You know, you always got to do this. And it's like, and here these motherfuckers, man, acting like kids all goddamn day long. Until somebody who they respect comes up and says something, and then they're all contrite, old minister. You know, whenever Farrakhan goes out into the ghetto for a photo op, oh man, I shouldn't be selling dope out here. You're right. And as soon as the minister leaves, they're right back to what the fuck they're doing. And what really fucking pisses me off is that some of you motherfuckers who want to be gangsters out here have no fucking need to. And when... Yeah, I should mention it, right? Look, you know, I never... You said this. Put it on the screen for me. Some school in New York City... apparently, if you can pass the exam to get into this this institution, you can get in, right? Is it a no-cost school? Okay, Stuyvesant, is that's what it's called? All right, look, I know nothing about the fucking thing, so take what I'm saying on that account, that I'm not in New York City, I know nothing about this goddamn program. But apparently, only 7 black kids got into this school for this upcoming semester, right? Because it's March. So this upcoming thing, there's only 7 African students throughout the whole student body. And, you know, I mean, when I first heard about it, it sounded really bad. But then there's a twist to this shit. There's a twist to this. And there's a twist to this in the sense that apparently damn near the entire student body is Asian. Asian students, right? So damn near the entire student body is Asian. So that means that whites are a minority. Are they counting South Asians when they say Asian? In that, do they do that here? Well, in any case, a lot of people are upset because only 7 black kids got it. And hey, y'all should be motherfucking upset. But see, I got a chip on my shoulder about this subject because when I was living in Newark and so on and tried to talk about trying to improve the motherfucking school system so that kids could pass these goddamn exams, because I did pass them, but I had an up in the game. And the fact that my mother was a voracious reader. So I grew up reading. You know, I started reading at 3, which is no big deal today. But it was back in the 60s because, you know, who fucking was doing that kind of shit? Children with children, right? But my mother wanted company, basically. And growing up, you know, her thing was to give me pocket change. And whenever we went to bookstores, I always had to buy a book. That's what we did. And I've always loved reading. And those of you who know, I'm a writer. So, you know, it's like, hey, I would never tell another black person, never fucking study this, that, and the other. But that's the thing that I'm getting to, because when I was going to fucking school, and if you don't like to hear this, fuck you. But I got my ass kicked by my goddamn neighbors. Not just the tough guys. I'm talking about my motherfucking neighbors, man, for going to school. For going to school every day, for not cutting goddamn school and hanging out with the crumb bums and shit on the corner. I used to get beat up for this. And when I was going to high school, I went to, you know, a fucking special high school, and I got beat up for that. And motherfuckers stopped talking to me because of shit like that. And then, you know, my family got the, I don't really know how to explain this because it's just so fucking stupid. But, you know, we were goody two shoes, you know, because, you know, my mother was literate. My father had a job. You know, I was going to school. You know, my brothers and sisters, we were all in school. And, you know, I mean, we never had a car or anything like that. I mean, we lived very modestly. But the point was that, you know, people thought that we were above ourselves because we took education seriously. Like I said, I came from a conservative family. And even though we took education seriously, that still didn't mean that they took my way of education seriously. My own family thought when I started studying poetry and shit like that, that I was above myself. When I started studying Chinese language, I was going above myself. When I tried to learn French, you know, what the fuck do you want to learn French for? So I got it at home, you know, because their idea was, you know, get your high school shit, maybe get a year. I'm the first person in my goddamn family to go to college. My grandfather went to college and one aunt. You understand what I'm saying? Even though many in my family are educators, and I guess, you know, I never really clarified that, have I, on this show. There's a couple of people, but, you know, well, actually, I have one is a university or was a university professor, and there was somebody else who, I guess, retired maybe about 10, 12 years ago, somewhere in the South. But for the most part, when I say educator, I'm pretty much really talking about the fact that many people in my family are doing kind of what I'm doing now. They would hold Swahili classes and shit. They would hold, you know, adult comprehension classes, right? They would hold African history class. And I'm not talking about this crazy shit about the Dogon, which is a bullshit fucking, you know, misunderstanding that a white man started, but that these Hoteps refused to fucking let go. You know, I mean, a bunch of them are still talking about Mauryan built the goddamn Sphinx. And that's this bullshit. That's this bullshit. And, you know, I don't even know where I want to go anymore with this, really. You know, yeah, I haven't been around because I'm pissed. I'm pissed. You know, it's like you motherfuckers are going to get all up and crazy about Pizzagate, but you allow the Catholic Church to stay in business, right? So the Nation of Islam is against white supremacy, but the deal with Alex Jones, who is a white supremacist, who associates and promotes white supremacists, said that Trayvon Martin never existed, all this type of shit. Scientology was founded by goddamn white supremacists, but it's all deep in the fucking craw of the Nation of Islam. Right after this, I mean, what, maybe a decade or a couple of decades or so, after Scientology was fucking found and convicted, prosecuted and convicted for infiltrating the CIA, the FBI, the entire intelligence fucking establishment, including naval fucking intelligence. They were infiltrated by spies from fucking the Church of Scientology trying to change the government's position on their motherfucking group. Right, because they, I mean, they only went for nonprofit status so that L. Ron Hubbard didn't have to pay taxes.
But y'all are okay with religion, right? And you don't see the difference in that. It's like my beef with Karen Gillibrand. No, I'm not going to support her. Why should I? Give me one reason why I should. Al Franken was really the worst motherfucker in the country. Al Franken was the worst person in government. Farenthold was sitting there laughing his ass off while all that shit was going on. So was Trump. Trump is still in office. Trump is still in office. But they got their revenge on the low-hanging fucking fruit. He was easy pickings. Because they knew that he would have way more fucking integrity in that situation than any goddamn Republican. And he fucking left. And they filled that seat with somebody else. But here's the point. You kicked out Al Franken because you motherfuckers refused to play chess, right? So you're not going to... He was the only person in that motherfucking body that was challenging the Trump administration to any appreciable fucking degree. And that's who they removed. That's who they kicked out because he was the worst motherfucker in there because he's a goddamn comedian doing jokes. Now, I'm not excusing the shit that he did because it was sexist. But let's just be fucking really serious about this. If we're going to get on fucking Al Franken for that photograph and these other allegations of basically, you know, right? If we're going to get on him for that, then this does, you know, there's no room for no motherfucking black comedian in America ever again. Because how much bullshit is said in black comedy? But when black comedy is sexist for male or female fucking comedians, y'all don't say shit. It's just like catcalling in the fucking hood. And see, and one of the reasons why I'm saying this, because, you know, a few weeks ago this happened on the street where these two people got into an argument and they had a disagreement. And the male, one of the people that was there, he got up and walked away from the group. And the woman who was sitting there was saying, oh, you know, I mean, he's such an asshole and da, 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 da. I mean, the way he talked to me, I just feel like I was raped. And the other women are sitting there nodding and the other guy's like, you know, you can't, you know, what do? You just sit there, right? And I'm thinking, you know, I'm listening to this like a lot of other people who were sitting there. And it's like, wait a minute, why did she use that word? Why did she say that? Why did she say that? You know, and I'm hearing a lot of people use that word loosely. I mean, ridiculously fucking loosely, because, you know, there was this other person who did something and he was talking to his pal. They were on a phone. He goes, yeah, man, it's like, like I raped myself. I'm like, yo, y'all need to, you know, I mean, I didn't say anything to him, but it's like, you know, language. God damn it. You fucking millennials, you're cheap in language to the point where it doesn't mean any goddamn thing. It's just like this nigga shit. I'm getting tired of fucking people who should know motherfucking better. Older goddamn black people still fucking excusing this. Still finding a reason to explain to me why black people call to themselves nigga isn't mentally fucking ill. It's sick. I mean, I use nigga in context, man. It's like to make a fucking point. I don't identify as a nigga. Fucking, you know, there are people talking about, I ain't black, I ain't African American, I'm a nigga, huh? Right? Because you're talking about an emotion. You're talking about some fucking idea of an ism. You're not talking about motherfucking reality. And what I'm saying is, and it's not just young people, it's just young people are fucking being raised in this shit. But the rest of us, we're losing a grip. We're losing a fucking grip. Now, Me Too comes out. And yeah, I support it, but do you have to make it, you know, fucking like a hashtag and trending? You know, now where is it now? After Gillibrand got rid of Franken and a couple of these other motherfuckers flaked off, okay, now what? Have any of you talked about women who do a 7-year fucking prison bid and come out with 3 children with no conjugal visits? Have you dealt with that yet? Have you dealt with what the fuck I saw growing up, where women had to trade sexual favors with the maintenance goddamn staff in the projects to get her motherfucking pipes fixed, to get the hinges of her door put back on? No, you motherfuckers ain't talking about that shit. See, y'all ain't talking about that, right? You ain't talking about why you talk about sexism. None of you talk about the goddamn choosing process that goes in for these fucking rap videos. because I guess, you know, I mean, it's been a long time since I've been a bouncer, Lupe. I mean, really a long time. I'm too old for that shit now. But really, things have changed. It's become gender neutral now back there. Really? Yo, hey, hey. Daddy, I got your money. Or what is it? Or bitch, I got your money. You know, what is it? You know, your motherfuckers don't know if you want to support pimping. You want to look like pimps, talk like pimps, dress like motherfucking pimps at these goddamn music festivals and shit. I mean, just like with this, what was it? Robert Kraft, the ball team owner. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't give a fuck about him goddamn going after these prostitutes and shit. My question is, where did the prostitutes come from? Where's Me Too when it came to how many goddamn, you know, human traffic victims were in that motherfucking storefront? And how many of them all over the goddamn country? Has Me Too talked about that? No. But they're still talking about what happened with Clinton and fucking Monica Lewinsky. And I'm here to fucking tell you, I'm not one of these motherfuckers, man, who is, you know, I'm tired of hearing about it. Okay? You know, unless you can, you know, fucking show that he fucking forced her to do anything, I'm tired of hearing about how she's a victim because this guy lied to her. And because he was her boss. Because that's what happened with Matt Lauer. The woman says it was consensual, all of this stuff, but, you know, he was still my boss. And but like I said, while all that shit is stirring up and, you know, men of this and da 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 da, well, we're still going to fucking, you know, push Hohen and defend the cam girls because this is the only way that they can make a living. But we don't see the contradictions in this shit. Like I said, the prostitution, you know, should be legal to me. Because it's legal in motherfucking Nevada. Didn't the goddamn Republican office holder, runner, right after he won the goddamn election, he died partying with Ron Jeremy, which you can expect that, right? Because Ron Jeremy found his body. But he was there with Ludacris and some other black rapper. This Republican, but he's in a whorehouse, right? But there's no contradictions here. You know, we don't understand why, right, the racism is continuing. We're calling ourselves nigger. We sing about it all the time and slinging dope and selling bitches. But we don't understand why people think we're bad. You know, we're trying to hold on to that aesthetic and at the same time say that we deserve every fucking thing. Because what I'm talking about with the Stuyvesant shit, you know, these motherfuckers, the people that I'm criticizing right now, because they know who the fuck they are. They know who they are. They're the ones that are like, oh, we have to have hip hop in the schools. We have to have it. If we don't have hip hop in the schools, we'll never be able to teach these children. We're going to lose an entire generation of black children. We have to reach them. We have to reach them in a way that they understand. Yeah, and now you got nigga this and nigga that and nigga this and nigga that, but we don't understand why the police think that we're niggas. We don't understand why only 7 of us are getting into fucking Stuyvesant and shit. Because apparently you had to take an exam in order to get into motherfucking. Apparently Asians ace this goddamn exam because they take education fucking serious. In the hood, if you're trying to go to school, you got to fight sometimes your own goddamn family to fucking go to school, let alone the fucking neighborhood to get through them to get to the fucking train or the bus or whatever the fuck it is you got to get to where you got to get a fucking education. Then you got to fight the system when you get in there because you got substandard goddamn materials. You got old substandard motherfucking syllabuses, right? I mean, I was using books when I was in school from the fucking 40s and 50s. If it wasn't for the fact that I was a reader at home, I would not have passed my goddamn exams back then. I'm telling you right now how I got out of school. It was because, you know, my mother was a reader and I had that at home. So do you kind of get where I'm going with this? If you want your children to motherfucking succeed over there in New York City, you have to make an effort to fucking help them. You have to take the goddamn cell phone from them, take the fucking Xbox and shit, tell them fuck the new sneakers and whatever else is out here to be hip and all that bullshit, and get down to your motherfucking books. Because that's what I had to deal with. When I came home, I had my chores to do, and then I knew I had better get to the fucking homework or I was going to have to talk to my father, and I didn't want that. You understand? We had to bring in good grades. Now, I'm not excusing, you know, the harshness, and it's probably coming off a lot more harsh than it was, you know, considering. But I really have to sit and think about it in a lot of ways and really thank my fucking parents, man, for giving a shit. You understand what I mean?
And a lot of people will come up with all kinds of fucking excuses as to, well, you know, people are working. I understand that. You don't think these Asian people are busting their ass too? Give me a fucking break. You know, there's a lot of anti-Asian racism in this motherfucking country. Now, you know, that's because they like to marry Asian women while claiming that they don't have an Asian fetish. But this is like their 13th Asian girlfriend and shit, you know, and this, you know, the second Asian wife, right? You know, they put up with a hell of a lot of fucking racism here. It's the same thing with light-skinned black women. You know, it's a lot easier for them to go through the world, right? I'm a light-skinned black man. You think that shit? No, it doesn't help me at all, you know. Because I'm not, you know, it's not exotic. It's not welcome. It's not wanted. It's more like a who the fuck, what are you? But with women, there's a little more of a mystique around that shit, right? So, you know, Asian women seem like they're getting the best of things because these guys fawn over them because they totally have an ethnic fucking fetish thing goddamn going on. But see, but we can't have a real fucking discussion about it because as soon as one person jumps up and says, no, my husband really loves me. Well, lady, we're not talking about you. We're not talking about the legitimate fucking white men that are married to Asian women that are not going through that bullshit. We're not talking about you. We're talking about the fucking ones who are out here specifically looking for this goddamn thing. While at the same time, you know, you have, you know, breast enlargements all over the goddamn place. I mean, they're giving this shit out for high school graduation fucking presents now, right? Nose jobs. But at the same time, you know, don't fetishize me. You know, don't talk about my legs or that you like my body because that means that you don't like me, right? Because, you know, with millennials, everything has to be like a game. Right? It has to be what they want, when they want it, as they want it. Because that's what I was talking about with NPR earlier. Rolling back to that. That, you know, what the story was on NPR that I mentioned earlier was they said they can't keep 20 some odd year olds now because they don't stay. They just like, oh, I don't like this job and I quit. Right? Or they get the job and they say, oh, yeah, in 2 weeks I'm going on vacation, by the way. And I need time off. They just got the fucking job. I mean, for most of us, you know, it's like my age group anyway. When you got a goddamn job, you didn't call sick. You were never late. Nothing. Because you were trying to keep your motherfucking job. These motherfuckers, they know they can get another goddamn job. They're white. They can get another job. You know, I mean, there's meth addicts that I've known. They for some reason, they're in and out of programs. But and they're white. They continue to find work. The black ones can't find shit. But just no complaining about it, it does nothing. That's why I'm saying, you know, talking Malcolm X ain't shit to doing Malcolm X. You know, these parents that are upset with Stuyvesant, if that doesn't get you off your ass to come up with a fucking black academy, if you feel that the school system is not goddamn doing what it's supposed to do, to come up with a legitimate black academy to fucking fix the problem, not Umar Johnson's bullshit. Or whatever the fuck Tareed Nasheed has got to say, you know, or Setu Suti Seti, whatever the fuck it is, you know, no, none of those guys, none of those clowns. Come up with a legitimate fucking program with legitimate black goddamn scholars and educate your motherfucking children. Then you don't have to deal with the type of shit that you see in Stuyvesant. But I'm saying what I'm saying is because when I tried to get black people to do shit like this, black people told me to fuck off. Because they didn't want their kids to sound white like me, right? Yeah, I know I sound like a white boy. I know exactly what the fuck I sound like. And I know when I go back and forth, you know, with my fucking voice and all that, I know exactly what the fuck I sound like. Okay? But the fuck if I'm talking like these motherfucking... I mean, you sound like children. You know, I might sound funny, but I sound like a fucking adult, though. I was just listening to the podcast we were listening to. I'm not going to name it. And I only played you a piece of it, but it was the piece, right? She was talking about the Pizzagate and the nutcase that went into Comet Pizza. And she's like, and somebody came into the pizza shop with a gun. And the interviewer was like, okay. And she went through the rest of the goddamn interview like that. And, you know, it was just hard for me to fucking listen to because it sounds like I'm listening to a fucking child, man. And it's the same thing with Trump. I've been saying this ever since he got in office. The man speaks like a fucking petulant fucking child. Many of you
out here. And again, I'm not talking about you, dear listener, but I'm talking about the people I'm fucking complaining about. You dress like children. You act like fucking children. You bitch about shit like children. You use words you don't really fucking understand like children. You cause problems like children. And like fucking most goddamn millennials, you never want to admit that you're fucking wrong. Because that, like I said, back to the fucking prophet to close that off. These motherfuckers are influencers, right? Okay, so they, because of their influence and their good looks and their being on Instagram and Twitter fucking 22 hours a goddamn day, they sold a lot of fucking socks. And they got a couple of celebrities to like their shit, and they made $2 some odd million in 1 year, the first year. They have not made $2 some odd million since then, which is why they called the guy who does this show the prophet. Because they're not doing well, right? The whole point, if you see him, it's because you called him because your business is failing. So he hooked them up with some other small businesses because they had no business plan the entire time they've been doing business, right? Which is ridiculous. They had no real banking system. They had nothing. And when they went to the group's like, you got nothing here. So you're going to have to really learn what the fuck is going on. Well, They ended up having arguments damn near from the very fucking beginning because they were just telling these guys, well, you can't tell us anything. We made 2 point whatever million our first year. And the guy's like, well, I've made 10 million over a period of years because we worked at it. Didn't just happen overnight. Yeah, well, obviously we did something right. And he goes, yeah, you had a fluke. It happens. How many one-hit fucking wonders are goddamn out there, man? I mean, you know how many 45s and 33, if you're old enough to remember those, fucking I've gone through one-hit fucking wonders, man. 8 tracks I've gone through. Who remembers half these motherfuckers anymore, right? So, you know, I mean, come on. So, they're trying to teach them business because they have no business education. Like I said, they started this shit without a business plan. I mean, so many businesses fail in the United States because people have this idea, well, if I'm this positive, it'll work. That's bullshit. So, you know, they were all bitchy and people were like, fuck you. We don't want anything to do with you. And then as the show went on, they were just making shit impossible for everybody. They were trying to take it over and knew nothing. Their main claim to fame was they made 2 point some odd fucking million and he ended up walking away from the company. And this was because I've watched this a few times and it's always the same thing. When he does this, it's some young white guy who can't be told that he doesn't know what he's doing, that you got lucky one time because you came out with something new, came out at the right time and you got the right market that time. And it's just not sustainable and you need to make some changes, whatever the case may be. No, you can't tell me this, that, and the other. And then they make a deal with him and then they change the fucking deal without telling him. And then when you confront them about what they did, it's your fault. It's your fault. And I'm very serious about this. And there's a whole lot of goddamn things that we can get into that people put themselves in positions where, you know, they made a bad decision. They made a bad judgment. They thought they knew what the fuck was going on. Or they just thought that, well, I'd just be able to, you know, I'm not going to be grazed. And then they get into a situation and then they put themselves in this shit. But it's everybody else's fucking fault. And don't tell me that people don't think like this because the courts are full of cases like this all the goddamn time. I mean, you got fucking these stupid ass Devin Nunes who wants to sue SNL. For those of you who are not in the United States, Saturday Night Live, which is already should be taken off the air anyway because it's fucking stupid. There's nothing at all like the shit with, you know, in the fucking beginning. It's so fucking far from that is ridiculous. And why it has cachet again is because it's fucking entertainment. It's not about anything real. John Oliver's fucking entertainment. Trevor Noah's entertainment. But you motherfuckers take this shit as the news. The fact that Amy Goodman, one of the hardest goddamn working reporters in the country, that you don't know who the fuck she is, says something. It says something. You know, especially when I hear black people say, oh, well, you know, fuck democracy now. It's like, why do you, where's that coming from? It's like, well, they don't talk about black people. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, so in other words, if it's not a black themed news story as a feature every goddamn episode, then, you know, fuck them. You're not going to watch them. Come on, man. Come on, man. Really? That's a juvenile mentality. Well, if it's not going to be the way I want it when I want it, then fuck it. You know, and that's the way it is with everything. If the job turns out not the way I want it, then fuck it. I quit. If school turns out the way I don't want it, I quit. How many of you are going into marriages
Oh, well, if I don't like it, I'll just quit. And don't tell me that people are not saying that shit, because I hear it all the goddamn time. If your marriage doesn't work out, well, we'll just split. Then what the fuck are you getting married for? You know, it's like a friend of mine who admitted to me several years ago that she had tricked her boyfriend into getting pregnant. Yeah, because I'm sorry, but that happens. Because she thought that it would keep him. No, it did not keep him. You know, no, it did not keep him. He joined the motherfucking army. And when she showed up unannounced with that child, another woman answered the motherfucking door. Okay? And she made his life hell for like a good 10 motherfucking years after that. And she just admitted to me, she goes, you know, I did a lot of that shit because I was mad with him. I wanted him, and I thought that when we had this child, that he would be with me. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she's like, you know, and I saw a lot of other women do it, and I thought it'd be different with me. I'll make it different, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And she's like, and I blame him for every fucking thing. And it's like, you know, and I'm like, well, look, you know, you both of you had a hand in it, but you're telling me that, and don't tell me that fucking people don't do this, because people do this. People do shit like this. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, don't be angry with me. It's like, don't be angry with you. And see, that's the other fucking thing about you goddamn millennials that I can't stand too. It's like any kind of criticism, you got to give it to you soft. You can flip out and yell and have all kinds of fits and go on Twitter and Facebook and insult the motherfucker and ruin that goddamn reputation. But when you're being told about how wrong you fucking are, it has to be told, but to you very gently and softly. Because if not, you know, you're being offensive. Even though I was completely wrong to you. I mean, I've had cases where somebody says something really motherfucking off color, you know, racist. And I'm like, hey, man, you know, that wasn't cool what you just said. And he's like, well, you're being all aggro. I'm like, all aggro. I'm telling you that I didn't appreciate what you just said. And I would, you know, you need to think about what the fuck you're talking about. Why should I have to be, you know, and then it just went on. Well, I was oppressing him because he had his bullshit fucking opinion that nobody asked for that was really fucking racist. But then he turned the whole goddamn thing on that, you know, I had an, you know, I was just angry and I was focusing whatever my day's anger was on him. And when he admitted to saying what he said, he then was like, well, I'm having a bad day and I didn't mean it. And everybody just dropped it and said, well, hey, you know, he's having a bad day, right? Millennials. You understand what I'm saying?
I mean, what the fuck is the alt-right? Has everybody forgot what the fuck that was about? The alt-right? I mean, Gavin McGinnis is on record as saying we're here to bring violence. We're about violence, that there needs to be more violence. That's exactly what Gavin McInnes of the Proud Boys said. And then as soon as the weight came down in the rest from the federal fucking government, as soon as the attention came down from the same government that they claim is on their side, and that is going to help them, you know, get rid of the Jews, right? You know, to get rid of the blacks, to build the wall and prevent all of the Spanish-speaking Indians from coming across, and to get rid of the Geronimos that are here right now, right? No more prairie niggas, right? Jews will not replace us. This is exactly what the fuck these cats are saying. And these are the hipsters. They were on Joe Rogan's show. Gavin McGinnis was on Joe Rogan's show and talked about how there wasn't enough goddamn violence, and that he was a good guy, and he had all of the time in the world to explain all of his bullshit. So don't tell me that the hipsters are not a part of this. The hipsters are at the center of the whole neo-Nazi goddamn bullshit that we're dealing with, because they've made Nazism fucking permissive, and they've been bullying the rest of us into shutting the fuck up when it comes to dealing with this goddamn problem. When it comes to dealing with this particular fucking issue, you know, the fucking Hitler Youth, I mean, you know, they have co-opted Fred Perry, which, you know, MUDs and fucking sharp skinheads, you know, traditional skinheads and shit, you know, are totally fucking not keen on at all, right? And, the fucking Himmler haircuts. And all of that bullshit. And as soon as a few of them start losing their goddamn jobs after Unicorn Riot and some other sources that they added these bastards, you know, Gavin McGinnis, he's been real quiet, right? Michael Heimblock, whatever the fuck the name of that group was, the one who slapped around that sister that black woman at that rally, and got away with it, by the way. Well, so did Corey Lewandowski, whatever the fuck his name is, whatever it is, I don't care. He got away with manhandling that chick. You know, I mean, hey, you know, it, what? I mean, what? Matthew Heimblock is suing Trump. He's one of the people suing Trump because Trump said that he would pay his legal fees for the violence that he was involved in, right? At the Trump rallies. You know, apparently Trump hasn't supported anybody's fucking legal bills, even though that's exactly what he said. He's on video. I was getting ready to say he's on tape. He's on film. But he's on video. He's on digital fucking video. He's on digital fucking audio saying that he, you know, not only was encouraging the violence, that he wanted police to not be nice, right? He said, I will pay your legal fees if you get charged with beating up one of these anti-Trump protesters. And now he's talking about bikers for Trump and cops for Trump and, you know, what's going to happen to the rest of us if we don't do what the fuck they say. And now he's also hanging out with the dictator from Brazil while he's been praising Duterte in the Philippines. But, you know, the millennials are more worried about Antifa, right? Because, you know, Antifa is fucked up for not giving the Nazis their right to spew genocide and hatred. And, you know, fuckers like the Samoan down here in Portland, and the other jerk down here who's half Japanese in Portland, the two fucking neo-Nazis, and the Korean, fascist, anti-fascist infiltrator, right, who was giving all of the information on the Antifa bros to the local law enforcement, you know, and local law enforcement, like, you know, Mark Kruger and shit, you know, can put up Nazi posters. This is the fucking police now, putting up Nazi goddamn posters in the park, loses his job for it, but then gets his job back and his back goddamn pay, and gets a whole new job teaching the police how to fucking cope with the public. Figure that out. But, you know, millennials, I'm supposed to make way for the millennials because they know how to move forward, right? Millennials. Fucking millennials. You know, the same people who are telling me, well, I'm voting for Beto O'Rourke. Why? What does he stand for? They can't tell you, but they like him. The millennials like him. The female millennials like Gillibrand, right? Indians are completely hating Elizabeth Warren, even though she passed a goddamn DNA test. Okay? For a fucking tribe that is so goddamn mixed, they're really not in a position to say shit to anybody, especially after they kicked out their goddamn black members twice. But see, no contradictions, right? You know, no contradictions with the amount of heat that Elizabeth Warren got, and she passed her goddamn fucking thing. But science doesn't matter anymore, right? So, you know, we're going to get like that. In the meantime, the Northern Cherokee tribe, which does not goddamn exist somehow, a Republican member of the goddamn House, was it Kennedy? His motherfucking brother-in-law, a business that Kennedy himself is fucking involved in, they got $7.6 million in no-bid fucking federal contracts for a tribe that doesn't fucking exist. And I'm hearing about Elizabeth Warren, but I'm not hearing anybody native say anything about this fucking white man that belongs to a fucking native tribe that doesn't fucking exist. The Northern Cherokee of California, no such fucking nation. But Native people aren't saying anything about that. Contradiction, right? And I'm still seeing mostly Native women talk about missing, murdered Indigenous women. How many Native men are fucking saying anything about this? Contradictions, right? Contra-fucking-ditions, man. These are contra-fucking-ditions. And see, and young people are making it fucking worse. Because y'all don't even know how to deal with human beings any fucking more. You're on fucking line. It's like, you know, this shit about Asperger's. It's really not a joke. A lot of fucking people act like they have Asperger's because they don't know how to fucking deal. If they don't get what they want right away, then fuck you. You know, if it's not the world that they can have, that fucking, you know, this deals with what they want. Mm-mm. So, you know, politically, we're fucked up. But we're sitting around asking ourselves why we're fucked up. We're fucked up because
we're not growing up any goddamn way. When you stop education in the United States, I mean, it was fucking like damn near 10 years ago where they asked the children in Oklahoma, the school children in Oklahoma, who the first president was. 75% of them said Lincoln. Because how else could you have somebody like Trump as president if you had an educated motherfucking populace? Somebody motherfucking talking. This is The Angry Indian, and you've been listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Nolan Hack, black activist from the city of Los Angeles, California. You are listening to the Intelligent Original Radio, and this is a wonderful show, and you should always tune in.
The very distinguished witnesses for your presence here today. Question for Mrs. Hardaway. Have you ever publicly expressed an opinion about the presidency of Barack Obama?
No, because I wasn't into politics or anything like that. So when you say, wait a minute, hold on, when you say public, well, not when he was in office. Let me back up. If I had something to say, it was during the election when they were running.
And what was that opinion?
That I didn't think he was a good president. He didn't do anything for the black community. Look at the people from Chicago, and he was from Chicago. So I had a very vocal opinion. But while he was in office, like the first, before the election, I didn't publicly say anything because I just wasn't into it.
I appreciate
until Donald
that.
Trump came along.
Now, are you familiar with a governmental entity called the Federal Election Commission?
The FEC, I am.
And are you aware that presidential campaigns are required to submit what's called campaign finance disclosure reports with the FEC?
Yes.
And those FEC disclosure reports detail contributions made to the Trump campaign. Are you aware of that fact?
It could be. I mean, okay.
And the FEC reports also publicly disclose what's called expenditures or disbursements made by the Trump campaign. Are you aware of that fact?
Well, I keep hearing it. I heard somebody put out a news article that was out there, but...
Okay. Let me enter into the record, Mr. Chairman. I ask unanimous consent for what's called the post-general election FEC report filed by the Trump campaign on May 12, 2017.
Can he tell me how
Sir,
much...
Sir, Mr. Gomer?
The memory of her kiss...
That objection.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hardaway, I think you stated on the record today at least three times, quote, we were not paid by the Trump campaign. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, are you aware that your testimony today is under oath subject to the penalty of perjury?
Yes, we are aware of that.
Okay. Now, the FEC report dated May 12, 2017 states that on November 22, 2016, the campaign of Donald J. Trump, or President Incorporated, paid Diamond and Silk $1,274.94 for field consulting. Are you familiar with that?
We're familiar with that particular lie. We can see that you do look at fake news. What happened is, and what should have happened is, you should have come to our mouths to see what exactly happened before a false narrative was put out there about the $1,274.94. So let me explain right now to you in the world.
Hold on one second, because I want to give you the opportunity to explain, which is why I'm asking the question.
Right.
I'm actually trying to figure, are you calling this FEC document fake? Well, actually, let me get some
clarity. We're not calling that fake.
I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond.
Okay.
I'm struggling. I'm really just trying to figure out, right? Because you have an FEC document that clearly indicates that the two of you were paid for field consulting by the Trump campaign. That's just one document. There may be others that are out here. And presumably, This was a document filed with genuineness and authenticity by the campaign of the president that you so love. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to figure out.
We understand
who
that this
is lying here. Is it the Trump campaign or
is someone not telling the truth? Nobody is lying. However, there may have been a mistake from the Trump campaign whenever they wrote what the $1,274.94 was for. Actually, this was for because we was asked to join the Women for Trump tour back in 2016. And Miss Laura Trump asked that our airline tickets be refunded back to us because we paid for those tickets when we went from New York to Ohio. I have the email right here, which substantiates what happened on September the 11th, whenever Laura Trump wrote to Allen to tell them to reimburse us. So that $1,274.
Well, now let me just ask you one final question.
No, it was for a reimbursement.
I understand.
That's right. Not Phil Kentucky.
I understand.
I've never been paid by the Trump campaign.
I appreciate that, and I'm just trying to figure out whether, consistent with what the president indicated. He urged you to monetize your support for him. And I'm just trying to figure
out. He urged us to monetize our platform. And there's nothing wrong with that. As you, as an African-American, you're not going to make us feel guilty because we're going to get out here and we're going to take advantage of these platforms and monetize just like everybody else do. I don't see you walking up to a white person and saying, oh, you shouldn't be monetizing that. So why are you, as an African-American, making it?
The gentleman's time is
wrong with us monetizing our platform.
I respect your game. I really
do.
It's not a game. It's not a game.
Of whether funds.
The gentleman's time has expired. I now recognize myself for five.
Please note, if you experience difficulty with a cassette, please hold it flat in the palm of your hand and slap it smartly against a hard, flat surface. If this does not work, call the customer service number shown on the package for a replacement. Discard the broken cassette.
When it comes to great steaks, I've just raised the stakes. The Sharper Image is one of my favorite stores with fantastic products of all kinds. That's why I'm thrilled they agree with me. Trump steaks are the world's greatest steaks, and I mean that in every sense of the word. And the Sharper Image is the only store where you can buy them. Trump steaks are by far the best tasting, most flavorful beef you've ever had, truly in a league of their own. Trump steaks are five-star gourmet, quality that belong in a very, very select category of restaurant, and are certified Angus Beef Prime. There's nothing better than that. Of all of the beef produced in America, less than 1% qualifies for that category. It's the best of the best. Until now, you could only enjoy steaks of this quality in one of my resort restaurants or America's finest steakhouses, but now that's changed. Today, through the Sharper Image, you can enjoy the world's greatest steaks in your own home with family, friends, anytime. Trump steaks are aged to perfection to provide the ultimate in tenderness and flavor. If you like your steak, you'll absolutely love Trump steaks. Treat yourself to the very, very best life has to offer. And as a gift, Trump steaks are the best you can give. One bite and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And believe me, I understand steaks. It's my favorite food, and these are the best.
There has never been a more savage motion picture than Raw Meat. Beneath modern London, buried alive in plague-ridden tunnels, lives a tribe of once humans, the raw meat of the human race.
But how could they survive so long without food?
I imagine as each one died, the others ate him.
They were like raw meat, a sinister evil that festered for generations in its moldering tomb. Neither men nor women, even less than animals. Their strange hunger driving them to prey on the young and the strong. Raw meat, rated R, under 17, not admitted without a parent. There has never been a more savage motion picture than Raw Meat.
I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, healthcare, including reproductive health, was women's business and respected as such. Reclaim your healthcare choices by keeping yourself informed and sharing information with your relatives. Inform yourself about Plan B, known as the morning after pill. Plan B will protect you from becoming pregnant after a sexual assault or unprotected sex if taken within 72 hours. Make sure your local Indian Health Service facility carries Plan B. It does not require a prescription and should be provided upon request. It's your right. For more information, call your local healthcare facility. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Missy Elliott for the Black AIDS Institute.
HIV happens to us more than it does anybody else, which is why we should all get tested, because if we don't step up, then nobody will.
Get informed, get tested, get treated, and get involved. For more information, call the Black AIDS Institute at 213-353-3610. That's 213-353-3610. Or online at www.blackaids.org.
These are Manfred and Leo Friedman. They are my first cousins. Not distant relatives, first cousins. A few months after this picture was taken, 75 years ago, the Nazis put them on a train and then exterminated them, like vermin. They might have been saved if the U.S. had approved their parents' application to emigrate, but it didn't, because Americans thought Jews were shifty and dangerous. For some people in the White House, the Holocaust exists only in the history books. For the Jewish people, it is a collective national trauma. But along with Manfred and Leo and their parents, the Nazis murdered my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, and countless other relatives. So for me, and for many other Jews, the Holocaust is still very, very personal, each and every day. Which is why I felt that, in recent days, the White House bashed my head in three times in a row. First, when President Trump's ban on Muslims brought back painful family memories of America's locked gates. Second, because the Holocaust is first and foremost about Jews, Manfred and Leo, along with 6 million others, were murdered because they were Jews, but the White House erased Jews from its Holocaust Day statement. And third, because White House spokesman Sean Spicer had the chutzpah to describe complaints about the omission as pathetic nitpicking and to proclaim that Trump had gone out of his way to mark Holocaust Day. In other words, the Jews should be grateful and shut their mouths. But I'll tell him what's truly pathetic. One, that the White House, hopefully out of ignorance, tried to minimize the centrality of Jews in the Holocaust, like some Holocaust deniers. Two, that its excuse for doing so is a perverse kind of political correctness of trying to be, and I quote, incredibly inclusive. Three, that rather than apologize or admit a mistake, the president's automatic response is attack, attack, attack. Four, that the administration still can't comprehend how much it hurts so many Jews, especially in America. And five, that Trump believes that support for Israeli policies or that a Jew was involved in writing the statement makes everything better. But I'll tell you what's really pathetic. That Israel didn't say a word. That Prime Minister Netanyahu and his ministers would have torn Obama apart if he dared do something similar, gave in to political expediency, cowardice, and just plain indifferent. That was truly pathetic and hurtful and very, very personal.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm
really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying, for Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Now, you know, I thought about that after we headed on down. I finally arrived here at this rat's nest. And the uproar continued here, the 4,500 elevators going up and down, and 18,000 little short guys with gray fedoras with brown attaché cases getting off and on, and their cigars going fiendishly in the oven, you know. And I was thinking about that line, and that line, you know, all this jazz that they're putting on the air about dropouts, all this crud, you know, they come out with 45 minutes of rock and roll, and they think this is going to convince Murray the K, one of our deeper thinkers, this is going to convince the klutzes sitting out there, they ought to go back to school. Well, Murray shows it, you know. I'm not saying anything about whether or not. See, I think people confuse entertainment with communication. And the idea that you've entertained 4,000 kids who are dropping out with rock and roll, the idea that you've communicated the idea that they shouldn't drop out, is a totally erroneous one. In fact, I have seen hours of entertainment put on in the name of good works. I have been myself, I've been on at least a half dozen telethons. I have made it a rule for the last couple of years to never even get near those monstrosities. And they're done with the idea that they're doing something for good works. Well, you know, this letter this kid wrote to me that I mentioned here earlier on the opening of the show is very true. It's literally true that today entertainment has totally superseded any kind of serious consideration of any problem that we're faced with. And so we take the case, let's say the case of one of the passé subjects of our world, the atom bomb. People really think they've done something about the atom bomb when they go to see a Stanley Kubrick movie. They really do. They honestly do. They have that great sense of being right thinkers, you know. They walk down the street, they paid their $4 to see this turkey, and they feel that they've really done a majestic thing about the atom bomb. Large numbers of people, seriously, will read a book by James Baldwin and think they've done something about civil rights. This is a difficult problem because our world is full of right-thinking people who prefer to think about subjects or talk about subjects or breastbeat about subjects or wail about subjects, and then they put in their little wailing period and then they go off to business as usual. Now, this is not necessarily new, but it's getting to be a major difficulty in our time. Always there were the non-doers. They always were with us. But today, the non-doer has begun to believe he is a doer. That's a new trick. That's a new twist to it. In short, the guy who buys a Lenny Bruce record really thinks he's done something for freedom of speech. You know, this is a fascinating problem. 1,800 kids sitting in a teach-in. Now, with the parallel that has developed too, the parallel of entertainment as an action, a positive action. The idea of sitting in an audience at an entertainment. This is felt today to be a positive forward movement. You know, one of the things that I have felt very strongly about so many of the civil rights units that I have been often on involved with is that they all seem to eventually wind up as entertainment. They're sort of like a traveling USO troupe. And so they're constantly having these various things where Duke Ellington and where Marion McKeeba, any one of five, Bob Dylan sings, you know, the whole scene, everyone sits and applauds and roars and pays their $2 and leaves. And this is being really a brave civil rights fighter. This is a problem which, and on the other hand, have you noticed that civil rights has been often largely taken over by entertainment figures, who merely do what they've always done. They tap dance, they sing, they get up on the platform, and hardly anybody ever listens to people, sociologists, for example, people who have made a genuine study of this issue. Nobody's bothering with that because it's not entertaining. It ain't fun. It is not fun to listen to somebody who has studied the economic, the socio, the educational problems involved in such things as civil rights. This is a drag, and so nobody bothers with it. There are countless discussion shows going on the air, ranging all the way from the David Susskind big time TV discussion show to the serious afternoon programs on Sunday. Who are they constantly talking to in these civil rights programs? Well, people like Harry Belafonte. This is a deep thinker. People like Dick Gregory. You know, I like Dick Gregory, but he is not necessarily Bertrand Russell, you know. People like, and I'm putting these people down. They will get Steve Allen. I like Steve Allen, but Steve Allen often, Steve Allen is, he often reminds me of my emotional Aunt Teresa, who was always emotional about the right things, but totally illogical 97% of the time, and would reduce herself often to just a state of going, when you finally get her down to, well, now, come on, let's talk about the real situation. Speaking of the emotional, this is WOR-AM and FM in New York. And this you know, I don't often talk about these things on the air, but because I am in the entertainment world. And I recognize, though, that most people get very irritated when they begin to hear serious discussions of one thing or another about subjects which can be very, very troublesome, unless they're larded with laughs, unless they're watching a star do it. Who wants to hear about the problems of Birmingham if you're going to talk to two sociologists and a social worker and somebody who really knows something about it, when you could get somebody, say, really jazzy like a Norman Mailer? So ultimately we wind up confusing entertainment with action, which can be a very serious problem. And so you'll find that in most colleges today, many colleges today, they would much rather hear Joan Baez discuss Vietnam than, let's say, the ambassador to Vietnam, who has come back after 2 years of studying the subject and working with them. Much rather hear what Bob Dylan has to say on the subject. They would much rather hear a professor at their university, who is a beloved figure anyway, who is teaching romance literature of the 12th century. They would much rather hear him talk about Vietnam than, let's say, somebody who has to deal with it every day across the table and who knows perhaps a little more about it than he does. Why? It's all part of that entertainment syndrome. They would much rather hear seven freshmen from Dental Polytech who have learned to sing "I've Been Working on a Railroad" through their noses. They would much rather prefer to hear pseudo-folknik folk singers sing about poverty than somebody who has spent the last year and a half in West Virginia and studied the subject and can say something about it and tell them about it. They'd rather hear Bob Dylan sing, "Oh, you don't know what troubles I see now walking on the long road of life." Oh, come on. You really think you're finding out about the poverty listening to big friendly Jack Elliott, who spends all of his time in the Fiend, John? You really do? You really think you know something about the Irish by listening to the Clancy Brothers? Get it off. Come on. And seriously, though, this is a real problem, even though everybody's probably laughing now at what I'm saying. This is a genuine problem today. That we have a country right now that has the greatest amount of communication facilities that's ever been developed in any major power in the world. And here we sit with all these things. We sit with all these radios. And what do we have hour after hour on every radio station in the country, with very, very few exceptions, hour after hour? Well, you get it set up then. Hour after hour after hour. What do we have? What do we have when it comes to serious discussion? You know, I'll tell you what it is. I think that the Americans basically are probably the quickest bored people in the world. I think at the very background of it is we have probably the lowest boredom threshold of any people in any country anywhere. That means that boredom sets in quicker with us than it does with most other peoples. Perhaps because America is a country of extroverts. America is a country of bowlers. America is a country of playgoers. America is a country of Mary Martin fans. It's a country, by the way, it's also a country of demonstrating fans, because that is not boring either, you know. So don't just think I'm putting down Mary Martin fans, that everything has to be put in the form of a play or we're not interested in it. Every drama, every problem has to be put in the form of a bad novel, like Fail Safe. Everything has to be put in the form of two-bit, genuinely, I wish I could use some of the words that I could really use about this kind of stuff, ill-informed, turned-out-to-sell, melodramatic pulp literature that masquerades as the, you know, dealing with the problem. This kind of pulp, you know, it's just like taking the good guys and the bad guys. It's like taking the robbers and the cops and putting them into communist capitalist. I've read a half a dozen of these novels, and I wonder how many people actually take them seriously. Things like The Ugly American. This is pure childish balderdash. I've read it, and I know what I'm talking about, and I've been to those parts of the country, the parts of the world that that this deals with. It's as childish as the Western. The Western pulp fiction is... do you really believe Western pulp fiction is about Dodge City? You really do? You really think this is the real way it was? Do you really think Shane really is about the West? I mean, seriously? Do you think High Noon is the way it was in Texarkana? You really do? Well, if you do, then you're really ripe for the kind of thing which passes today for grappling with a situation that is a worldwide, or certainly maybe in most cases a countrywide problem. We are so attuned to entertainment that we often confuse entertainment with thinking. We often confuse entertainment with reality. And so if we see a play, I saw a play recently on Broadway about the civil rights issue. It was one of the silliest, saddest, worst-written pieces of pulp claptrap I have seen in my life. It made Uncle Tom's Cabin look like a genuine sociological treatise. It really did. And because it was written by a beloved writer of our time on the subject, it was and hardly anyone dared to say it. Very few of the critics dared to open their mouths and say, "This is really bad playwriting." It's not only bad playwriting, but the ideas are ridiculous in it. And I am not, again, I guess one of the fears is that once you begin to say certain entertainments which have pseudo-high-mindedness, pseudo-serious entertainments, once you say something against them, it is construed by the public at large that you are against the good the good themes that they're for, or ostensibly for. That's why so many critics, you know, are very much afraid to blast the fantastically bad biblical epics, which continue to come out of Hollywood continually. They come out of Hollywood almost every couple of months. There's always a giant thing starring Charlton Heston with his face painted orange, you know, and he's wearing a bearskin rug. And behind him, you have music by Dmitri Tiomkin, pseudo-religious music. And he's coming down out of a cardboard mountain, you know. And it's such bad stuff that it makes you embarrassed to even look at it. And yet you'll find very few critics will really say that, because they're afraid that if they say this is a bad movie, they will sound like they're atheistic. They will sound like they're anti-Bible or anti-Christian or whatever it might be. Now, this holds true in many other forms of entertainments today. We go seriously. I've often thought, have you noticed in book review sections, for example, they will categorize literature. They will say serious literature. That's all up in the front of the New York Times book review section. Then they will have Western, and they'll have a whole page of Westerns. Then they'll have a whole page of detective fictions. They call it crime at large, whatever that might be called. Have you noticed they categorize fiction like that? And that, in a sense, gives them a chance to blast what they want to blast for the fact that this is just a detective story, so they throw it into that bin. This is just a Western story, they throw it into that bin. This is serious because it's thick, and Saul Bellow wrote it, so it's serious. They throw it into that bin. And I've wondered why they don't really come out with some honest categorizations of these things. Why don't they have a categorization, homosexual literature, just as cleanly and definitively defined as, say, Western literature? Because this form of literature has its own shadowy, it has its own stock figures. And it's as serious, by the way, as most Western writing is. Has it ever occurred to you that many guys who write what we call Western pap are serious about it? I've known a few of them. I've known guys who've written it. You know that Raymond Chandler was very unhappy that he was never accepted as a serious writer. He thought his books were very serious. They kept putting it in the back there where it says detective literature. He was dealing with crime, you see, as his raison d'etre and his good and evil. Today, in this age of sex writing, the only serious book is a book that deals with sex. That's literally what we've come to believe in, and it even crops out in little side comments by people like Richard Watts the other day. And I happen to like a lot of things Watts says, but the other day he was saying looking at a play in England, and in passing he remarked, he says, of course, he says, this is going to be a kind of a controversial play. It deals with ordinary sex as opposed to the traditional themes of adultery and so on, which means in a sense that the theme of all serious writing in our day is sex. And so that's a fascinating development. Now, on the other hand, whenever anybody deals with so-called serious situations, genuine situations, like let's say the war in Vietnam, let's say the war, the big conflict of our time between capitalism and communism, it has to be dealt with in the form of these fantastically, unbelievably bad novels by people like the late Eugene Burdick. People who turn these things out in about 7.5 minutes flat, written from headlines and taken from very bad reports by second-rate reporters everywhere. This is the way a serious subject is dealt with. I submit to you that in general most books written on sex are not serious at all. They're fantasies. I submit that to you for what it's worth. We all live in a world. We've all had our experience with sex, one kind or another. Does it have any relationship at all with the stuff that you generally read about it in most novels? Of course not. It's, again, that's part of that fantasy world. And so I submit to you, for whatever it's good, and by the way, that's a pompous word to use, submit. I submit to you that this is the true fantasy world. In other words, fantasy fiction is really most of what we call serious literature. To me, that is true fantasy fiction. Something like Norman Mailer's American Dream is fantasy fiction. Whereas, on the other hand, I think most of what is written in the world of fantasy fiction, what we call ordinarily fantasy fiction, is not fantasy fiction at all. These are the guys that are really seriously thinking about the problems that face the world. Automation, the space problem, the future of mankind. These are little problems, so they go way in the back by the crossword puzzle and the ads for trusses. The reviews, if they're reviewed at all. And up in the front, some piece of total claptrap, like the American Dream, is treated seriously. To me, this is genuine fantasy fiction. Most of what is written on the civil rights is fantasy fiction. This is a very personal comment here, and I'm not attempting to foist my attitudes of these things off on anyone else except here I am. I'm airing them. That's all. But I will say that I feel very, very strongly about the slow encroachment of entertainment into the world of what could have been a serious dialogue about the. You know, I think one of the reasons why many people don't like Johnson, he's not very entertaining. Johnson is just not a pizzazzy TV personality. He just isn't. And in fact, I was reading one of the so-called top critics of the administration recently, and he seemed to hold that against Johnson more than anything else, was the fact that Johnson wasn't exciting, and he held that down. Well, Hitler was very exciting, for those of you who are interested in real going personalities. He really was. Be careful when we begin to confuse exciting personalities with deep thinking. This is quite often the case today. And, you know, are you aware that most serious, and I use that in quotes, discussion programs on television today very carefully screen anybody who is going to be on the discussion, and then they're supposedly having a serious discussion, to make sure he's what they call, in their jargon, by the way, be careful because this is a loaded word. Well, Manny, is he articulate? What they mean is he jazzy? Does he come on strong? They don't necessarily mean articulate at all. They mean, is he photographic? Is he interesting? Does he have a clever turn of phrase? Does he realize we're in showbiz? Keep the show moving. Let's come up with the jazzy little remarks. Let's talk about the big end things. I'll never forget the time I was really thrown by this. The first time I began to see it in action. I was in the control room when a famous late senator was being interviewed, a show which is no longer on the air, a network show, and it was a show where every week they took a controversial character and he got on the air, and he was interviewed by this top newsman. And so it was about 9/10 of the way through the show, this guy all of a sudden accused, he took one look up at the clock and he realized they only had a minute and a half or 30 seconds left on the air, and he accused the interviewer of being a well-known communist sympathizer. He said, "Everyone knows that you're a communist sympathizer. Everyone knows that you're a comm simp. And I believe that the kind of people you represent, whether consciously or not..." Well, he laid it out. I mean, that's pretty interesting to accuse the interviewer of being a communist, in a sense. Well, there was just a brief second, and he went off the air. He timed it, see, and he rushed out of the control room and says, "How did you like that communist bit at the end? That'll give him something." He said, "Boy, that's exciting, isn't it?" And the guy stood there with his mouth hanging open. In other words, it was done as a showbiz gambit because it was exciting. It was exciting, and he recognized it was exciting, and tomorrow morning they would be quoting him in the news, and the next day after that he'd be interviewed about it, and the excitement would continue. Now, when that kind of let's be entertaining attitude begins to creep into the actual makers and the formers, the shapers of history, then look out. But I do feel, though, that today in this... this world of television and radio and best-selling novels, this world of instant people, this world of instant success, this world... You know, that. Are you aware that today in most art galleries and in many big art circles, that an artist, forget it, is not going to make it unless he is an interesting personality himself. If he's good copy, if Vogue magazine thinks his hair is cute, if Vogue magazine likes the kind of pad he lives in, then he stands to reason, he stands to make it, he stands a good chance of going all the way. That's the show business. Now, that's harmless. To me, I think it's silly, it's sad, but it is harmless. I don't care whether Vogue loves Andy Warhol far more than it loves his work, which is largely banal. I don't care. That's all right, because he'll be forgotten in a couple of months. This is the way of that kind of thing. But when we begin to bring that sort of attitude into other areas, then we're really in trouble. Then we really have got to be very careful. We've got to be very careful. Incidentally, that's another thing, too. This precludes, eventually, actually learning about any of the subjects at hand. Because I have found that most people who are wildly entertaining, who make good copy, rarely are people who spend much time attempting to get at the facts. Why? Because it's a different kind of personality, that's all. It's just a different kind of man. It's just a different kind of, and I don't want to make a generality like that. I'm not saying that people who know what they're talking about are always non-entertaining. I don't want it to be construed as that. However, it is a fact that in real life, quite often, the best people who do what they do best are often drab and colorless. The best lawyers I've ever known are guys who just believe me. They're not like the movie version of Clarence Darrow. They're superb lawyers, however. They really know what they're doing, and they really get it done. This is true in almost all serious fields. Very few good doctors look at all, act at all, or think like Ben Casey. Very, very few. And I want to give you one word of advice. If you run into a doctor who does, be careful. Be very careful. If you run into a lawyer who sits back and snaps his suspenders and who spits into the spittoon and opens up his celluloid collar and says, "Well, let's see, son, as old Phineas Pinkham used to say, be careful." You could very well be dealing with Phineas T. Flywheel. You could very well be dealing with the character that W.C. Fields always played as a lawyer. Now, on the other hand, this is true of politicians. You notice that today everybody's very excited about a politician here in New York City because he's cute. Now, I happen to know the man, and I admire him, but I'm not necessarily going to go along with the general attitude that because he's photogenic and he's got a great personality and knows all the right things, knows all the discotheques to go to, knows all the right dances to dance, that he is necessarily one who can deal really with some of the serious problems that face New York City. I wonder whether anybody can, but I'm not so sure that a man is necessarily qualified because he's entertaining, because he makes good copy, he's exciting, he's photogenic. These are all things which have come to become very, very important in our time, far more important today in our time than at any given time in history. Another thing, too, is as part of our showbiz syndrome, this is part of it. You notice that no showbiz attempt to talk about real life ever deals with anybody over 30 years old, ever. No chick who's in love with a guy is ever over whatever that nominal Brigitte Bardot mythical age is. Never. If she is, that's called a character bit, and it's played by Patricia Neal. However, real life seems to consist of young people doing things today, because this is part of the showbiz syndrome. And so real love is only able to be consummated, and sex and all this always has to be by somebody under 30. This is a fact. All good thinkers are under 30, unless it's a father figure, and he just sits in the background and rocks. That's Spencer Tracy. He's always the old judge. That's something else again. But however, this is one of the reasons why we suspect today any man who shows up on the TV screen, and he doesn't seem to be young enough. He doesn't seem to be young enough to be smart. He doesn't seem to be young enough to have wisdom. And I think this is one of the reasons why Mr. Johnson is in trouble, because Johnson does appear to be a mature man. He appears to be a man who has been around, has thought a lot of things, and has seen a lot of things and experienced a lot of things. And this can often be a drug on the mind. And by the way, I'm not here giving a speech pro Johnson. I am merely saying, though, that some of these things are some of the reasons why Johnson is not necessarily. And, oh, incidentally, that's another thing. The weak man today is often called he's called the truthful man. That a man today who is weak and who is frightened and who is unsure of himself is the man that many weak, unfrightened, unsure people will trust. And this is one of the reasons why almost all of our comics in the past 3 or 4 years have been little, weak, scared guys. It's the Woody Allen syndrome. They somehow are truthful. If a guy walks out and he's 6'2", and he's bronzed, and he has a square jaw, and he says, man, you don't know what trouble is. Nobody believes him. Why? Well, we just kind of, we go that way. And one of the things that we hold secretly, subconsciously against Johnson is he ain't Holden Caulfield. He has ideas and he believes in them, and that's the end of it, you know? He'll stand up for them, and obviously, in spite of all kinds of adverse criticism, he will do it. And that's a bad scene in a world where today most people wear rimless glasses and talk about how they're victims of society. He is not a victim. And so I suspect that the next big presidential candidate will be a victim, or he will proclaim himself a victim. He will play victim, and he will be little, he will be scrawny, he will be cute, lovable, he will be the kind that everybody wants to help and move on, everyone will say, well, you know, he couldn't be telling us evil things, because after all, he's one of us. And this is part of the showbiz syndrome that is all around us. You know, this is one of the reasons why large numbers of people in Germany dug Hitler. Because Hitler was a little scrawny guy, and he seemed to be just a little man that everybody, you know, he's just a little corporal, you know. And after all, he's speaking for us. He's a little man. He's known the terrible problems that we've all had, you know. There was an empathy there. But I'm wondering, after looking at so much of this jazz that goes on, I must get invited to at least 9 different things every week. And what do they want you to do? Do they want you to come to these things and talk seriously about civil rights? No, they want you to come and entertain about civil rights. I'm always invited by student groups to come and talk about entertain about Vietnam. That's what they want. They want a couple of big, wildly funny put-down lines, you know. This is what everybody wants. Nobody really wants to hear that it ain't so easy. Nobody really wants to hear what Mao Zedong said last week. You don't hear much talk about that. And if you do, somebody says, oh, is this a right-wing rabble-rouser? What's he bringing in here, extraneous stuff? Well, is it extraneous? I don't know, you know. I'm not so sure. Nobody wants to see pictures of what the Viet Cong are doing to little children in the Vietnam jungles. Nobody wants to see those pictures, because somehow they give you that vague, uncertain feeling that maybe there are two sides to this problem, which then precludes entertainment. I'm curious, you know, going back to the original premise, have you noticed how many dramas we have today on the air that use war as a basic spine? McHale's Navy, Broadside, all these. And have you noticed that almost all of them are funny? Almost every last one of them is funny. They've made war into some kind of a big, wild, funny entertainment thing where Ernest Borgnine rides around on a PT boat and yells and hollers, and they spend all of their time chasing waves, you know? Is it really that way? Do people really care whether it's that way or not? Well, I don't know, you know? You know, it's funny. Every time on any given show, I'm talking about my own personal thing here. On any given show, when I am doing shows, when I come on and I strive to be funny, I get large numbers of letters. You know, this is a fantastic show. But whenever you do a show where you seriously talk about things that are bothering you, you'll get dozens of letters. And what is this lecture? Come on. Well, when are you going to tell about when you were a kid, you know? Come on, get back. Tell us a wonderful story when you were in the Army, you know, and so forth. And you know, it's interesting. Whenever I tell an Army story that really deals with the war, people get very bothered and write angry letters. And yet they want me to tell Army stories. Like the time I told the Army story of riding back in the train. Riding back in the train, sleeping on the coffin of a dead PFC. This bothered a lot of people. And why? Well, you know, war is war, you know. And really it is what Sherman said it was. Rip Torn in combat to the contrary. McHale to the contrary. War really is that. And maybe we've created our own. Maybe we all secretly want it. Maybe man wants and desires and hungers after hell as much as he hungers after heaven. And since it's easier to produce hell, he whips it out whenever the hunger gets a little too strong. I suspect there may be something to that. But then again, this makes the whole problem very complicated. It can't be dealt with in a three-line bit by Lenny Bruce. It can't be disposed of in one single fantastic, insightful comment by Mort Saul. Right, gang? How about let's all singing a folk sing about it, huh? Who wants to play the guitar? I'll sing tenor.
The spook who sat by the door. The controversial best-selling novel now becomes a shocking screen reality. The story of the first black agent in the CIA.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me.
For 5 years, he was their token Negro. He kept his cool and let himself be used. And in return, they taught him how to spy, how to fight, and how to kill. For 5 years, he was the spook who sat by the door. And then, he turned the American dream into a nightmare.
This is not about hate white folks. It's about loving freedom enough to die or kill for it if necessary.
The spook who sat by the door. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
There are many arguments against the death penalty. It's not a deterrent against the crimes that it punishes. Society who use the death penalty don't have lower crime rates than those that do. When a country abolishes the death penalty, they are not plunged into criminal chaos. But even if the death penalty did reduce crime rates, would it then be acceptable? The death penalty targets the economically disadvantaged, those who can't afford good legal counsel, those without a voice in society. There's a saying in the U.S., capital punishment means that those without the capital get the punishment. Statistics show this is true. But would it be acceptable if people from all sections of society were executed? Does killing a rich man make killing a poor man right? The death penalty is irreversible and results in the death of innocents. When someone is dead, a retrospective pardon is of little use to them or their family. Since 1990, in China, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and the USA, there have been 51 recorded executions of child offenders, some as young as 14 years old. But even if no more innocents or children are killed, should we tolerate the death penalty? The death penalty is never acceptable. It abuses two of our most basic human rights. Everyone has the right to live, and no one shall be subject to torture. The death penalty obviously kills people, but it also tortures, physically by the brutal nature of execution, and psychologically by forcing individuals to wait to be killed. They wait, sometimes for decades, while others are led to their deaths. The horror of this waiting is unimaginable. Human rights are thus called because they apply to all human beings. They belong to all of us equally. An attack on these fundamental rights anywhere is an attack against all of us. The right to life is inalienable. It cannot be given, and it cannot be taken away. No matter how terrible the crime, in a world full of uncertainty, human rights are a clearly drawn line, a line between what is right and what is wrong, the line between imprisonment and execution. Every individual facing the death penalty is, whatever they stand accused of, still a human being. However much we revile them, however much we are outraged by their actions, however much we want revenge, they are still human beings. They may well have killed and tortured. They've crossed the line. But do we really want to join them?
They said, you want to go? I said, yeah, I want to go. And I punched them in the face. And then Coulter emailed me later, and she goes, conservatives never punched anyone in the face. Finally, you know, things are turning around.
And then Malzberg goes, you're not advocating violence, are you?
Thank you to NordVPN for sponsoring our next clip and giving you 66% off a two-year deal with promo code TYT or NordVPN.com/TYT. Get the only VPN with a perfect PC Mag rating and military-grade encryption by heading to NordVPN.com/TYT or by using the promo code TYT.
The New York Times is catching a little bit of heat, actually quite a bit of heat, after publishing a profile piece on Gavin McInnes. He is the founder of the Proud Boys, and they have been caught in a number of violent altercations throughout the country. One of the more recent altercations happened in New York following an event at the Metropolitan Republican Club. By the way, the Proud Boys were invited to the Metropolitan Republican Club to speak. And
I started this gang called the Proud Boys. And
the Proud Boys?
The Proud Boys.
What's Proud Boys about?
We will kill you. That's the Proud Boys in a nutshell. We will kill you. We look nice. We seem soft. We have boys in our name. But like Bill the Butcher and the Bowery Boys, we will assassinate you. Now, part of the reason I agree to do the talk is because I'm allowed to bring all my guys. And we can fight our way in and fight our way out.
I think it's our job to do it.
Fuck your dad, motherfucker!
And the cops just turn a blind eye.
If you're wearing a MAGA hat, as Sal is right now. Sal's in the studio, folks.
Oh, my God. It's Sal Cipolla. Where are you from?
I'm here.
Wow, you came a long way.
You're wearing a MAGA hat, and some guy with a slightly punk demeanor comes up to you and says, hey, are you Sal or are you pro-Trump? Choke him. Trust your instincts. Don't listen to what he has to say. Choke him. If I do a video where I say, how about we start throwing bricks? Is that legal? You can't call for violence on a specific person, but can you say they're throwing bricks? We should throw bricks. Can you call for violence generally? Because I am.
Fighting solves everything. We need more violence from the Trump people. Trump supporters, choke a mother... Choke a bitch. Choke a tranny. Get your fingers around the windpipe.
I want violence. I want punching in the face. I'm disappointed in Trump supporters for not punching enough.
Get a gun.
Get ready to blow someone's head off. I've even killed people in my dreams. That's how awesome my gun is.
Get in trouble. Get arrested. Get fired. Let's all get in this together. They can't kill us all.
Yeah, I got green tips, man. Those go through at least three bodies.
Oh, beautiful. Plop. I love the way he falls on his ass.
They said, you want to go? I said, yeah, I want to go. And I punched them in the face. And then Coulter emailed me later, and she goes, conservatives never punched anyone in the face. Finally, you know, things are turning around.
And then Malzberg goes, you're not advocating violence, are you? And I go, I absolutely am. It's a wonderful, effective thing.
This is it.
I started this gang called the Proud Boys.
Fuck you, Trump. We'll see you on the streets. Am I disappointed? Yes. But am I surprised? Hell no.
It clearly shows what the country is made up of, what the country was founded on.
Darwin described the United States as a greedy, hypocritical, racist, white supremacist, evil, warmongering nation.
Donald Trump is just a symptom of a greater system that has basically f***ed up for my people for over 500 years.
To me, the United States was founded in violence, develop in violence. And violence is an American, U.S. American tradition.
The thing that's rattling around in my brain is all of this militarized police and the attacks and everything that's been happening happened under the Obama administration. And I can't help but question what might happen under a Trump administration.
Now we have a really strong enemy to organize against that causes us to say, hey, we gotta get our together.
Anarchism is not bombs, disorder, or chaos. It is not robbery and murder. It is not a war of each against all.
Tune in to Subversion 1312, the 4ZZZ Anarchy Show.
Tuesday from 9 till 10 p.m. on 102.1 FM or streaming 4ZZZFM.org.au.
How about trying this future on for size?
Roseanne Cash for the American Association of Diabetes Educators.
Johnny Cash was my dad. For years he had diabetes but ignored it, even as his vision and health slipped away. Diabetes is serious. It can steal your sight, your limbs, even take you away from the people who love you. But it doesn't have to be this way. If you have diabetes, test and control your blood sugar regularly. You'll be healthier and you'll feel better too. To learn more, visit healthywithdiabetes.org.
This is episode and reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression, and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas, your one true voice in Kansas, this is the Radio Free Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. I think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/fightingcockfire.
Nicely played. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
In Parkland, Florida, the sun rises with 17 fewer children and adults. 17 fewer children and adults violently taken away from parents and families on Wednesday. The following are the names of Republicans and their career totals paid by the National Rifle Association to ensure gun laws never change and more innocent children and adults are murdered. 1. Senator John McCain, Arizona. $7,740,000. 2. Senator Richard Burr, North Carolina. $6,986,000. Number 3. Senator Roy Blunt, Missouri. $4,551,000. Number 4. Senator Tom Tillis, North Carolina. $4,418,000. 5. Senator Cory Gardner, Colorado, $3,879,000. Number six, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, $3,303,000. Seven, Senator Joni Ernst, Iowa, $3,124,000. Eight, Senator Rob Portman, Ohio, $3,061,000. Nine, Senator Todd Young, Indiana, $2,896,000. 10. Senator Bill Cassidy, Louisiana, $2,861,000. 11. Senator Tom Cotton, Arkansas, $1,968,000. 12. Senator David Perdue, Georgia, $1,825,000. 13. Senator Pat Roberts, Kansas, $1,584,000. 14. Senator Pat Toomey, Pennsylvania, $1,467,000. 15. Senator Ron Johnson, $1,269,000. 16. Senator Mitch McConnell, $1,261,000. And 17th, Representative French Hill, Arkansas, $1,089,000. These are the names of 17 Republicans paid by the National Rifle Association to make sure gun manufacturers keep their power and money no matter the cost in blood. A historic footnote. Since 26 people were killed in Newtown, Connecticut in 2012, more than 430 people have been shot in 273 school shootings. We do not have to tolerate thoughts and prayers. Quite a few of these Republicans are running for re-election. Register. Vote them out. In the meantime, join the movement. Go to everytown.org. I'm Tom from the CoffeeCast podcast, heard on demand on the Progressive Voices app or Progressive Voices on TuneIn, Stitcher, and iTunes.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
This ends our news flash.
Taking a dive, cause you can't help the slack floating downstream.
I'm taking my dive.
Oh, so let her go. Don't start spoiling the show. It's a bad dream.
Planning attacks on magistrates, politicians, and military officers.
Una célula terrorista que planificaba realizar un conjunto de ataques selectivos.
A terrorist cell which had planned to carry out a series of selective attacks has been dismantled. Colombian and Central American mercenaries were contracted for attacks on the lives of political and military leaders, on magistrates of the Supreme Court of Justice, and to carry out acts of sabotage on public services to create chaos in Venezuelan society.
The opposition leader Juan Guaido has denounced the government's accusations against his chief of staff and demanded his immediate release. From Caracas, Will Grant reports.
Videos and photos released by the Guaido camp appear to show intelligence officers at the home of the opposition leader's chief of staff, Roberto Marrero, who was later taken away in an armored car. Another opposition figure, lawmaker Sergio Vergara, who lives in the same building, also had his home searched and was briefly detained. The move has been denounced by Mr. Guaido, who said that weapons, two rifles and a grenade, had been planted at Mr. Madero's home by the intelligence agents. The U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, also called for Mr. Madero's immediate release, saying Washington would hold accountable those involved. The United States is one of more than 50 countries that recognize Juan Guaido as the interim president of Venezuela, although the government of President Nicolas Maduro says the opposition leader is illegitimate. Washington has also repeatedly warned the Venezuelan government from arresting or detaining Mr. Guaido. This move against his right-hand man will stir tensions further, both within Venezuela and internationally.